morning is Nymator versus Sherman. Again, the next case is Nymator versus Sherman. I apologize if I have mispronounced either name. Counsel, when you're ready. Good morning.
Morning, Your Honor. Please, the court, inform we are hearing on behalf of the plaintiff. Sorry.
Thank you for that clarification.
Your Honor, this is a case based on political subdivision. The political subdivision for the Miss Paul background, the lawyer was a passenger, but a little mini bus operated, driven by police of the defendant, who was also a defendant, and she ran a red light. Caused my client an injury and had a claim against Metro. During the 1969, the state of Nebraska waived immunity. We understand that that the sovereign immunity is a specific rule in order for somebody to bring a lawsuit against the state for the common law, act of negligence. It is not disputed that this defendant did send a notice to the defendant about a month after the accident. And that notice in the brief, and that notice to Simpson, who was not only the human resources, but also the director, the legal director of the defendant. Thereafter, I think there was no response. There was two other letters, which were also produced at the summary hearing. Those two letters from Ms. Simpson to plaintiff counsel were addressing this issue, and she clearly stated that she had been authorized by the court to be told to go ahead and offer a settlement amount. The first settlement amount was not accepted. Then she offered another settlement amount, not accepted, and thereafter, the plaintiff then filed suit. There's no dispute that the notice was sent. There's no dispute that the sufficiency of the notice. No dispute on the only dispute is whether or not the notice was sent to the person. That's the only issue here.
Counsel, if I might ask at this point, how do the facts of this case differ from the McElwee case?
It's good you ask the question on that. First, in McElwee, although it's the plaintiff was in the same defendant, the plaintiff sent, or an attorney for the plaintiff, sent a letter to Ms. Earl, who was a human resources. She did absolutely nothing. She didn't respond. She sent another letter, and then she also did not respond. And then she was fine. In this case, the letter was sent to a legal director, and I think the definition of legal director is somebody who is not, who advised you, and I think the lower court did find that a missing from whom got the letter was a legal advisor of the Metro. So the difference is such, clear that those were two different people doing two different jobs, and there was also responses who were also not in the market.
Doesn't McElwee tell you exactly who to send it to, even for this particular entity?
Yeah. is it your position that the statute 13-905, there's a provision that says that the claims are to be filed with the person whose duty it is to maintain official records, or the governing body may provide that such claims may be filed with a duly constituted law department? Is it that after the or part that you still support your position?
How does a governing body of a political subdivision, it says it may provide that such claims be filed, how does that governing body provide that the law department can receive the claims?
And that is what Marcus said in dicta. So I say that Metro has agreed to put together something to determine how people will submit it, and they did not do that. There's nothing to that effect. Our letter went unresponded. When we got a letter from the legal director, we assumed this is a problem. So without knowing, we assumed. And I think it's an inference that can be drawn, that definitely somebody saying that I was authorized must have brought somebody.
So your position is that the statute does support that the law department could receive the notice, and if that argument is not persuasive, then your equitable estoppel argument should persuade? Thank you.
And Your Honor, the notice requirement should not be used as a shield, it should be used as a sword. And a slew of cases have stated that, even my colleague says it's a question of making sure that the political subdivisions have an opportunity ahead of time to investigate, to negotiate, not as a shield when they're sued, to say, oh, you did not do this. And I think the dicta also says that, but they're not relying on the dicta, which is saying that is a school of statements to say that that it should not be used as a shield. It should be used as an opportunity for defendants and political subdivisions to investigate this act. And I think we do agree and concede that we did not send it, we did not cut and paste the statute and send it to the secretary or the deputy or anybody else. We do agree on that, but we do agree that the law does apply here, the equitable struggle does apply here. And the order of the court, this is possible. I just don't have time.
You still have your rebuttal time.
Okay.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Ryan T. Clark, and I represent these in this case, Barbara Schumann and the Transit Authority. The issue in this case, Your Honors, is very. All we're talking about is did plaintiff or the appellant comply with the notice requirements sent out to political subdivision for claims on July 9th, 2012. That's the issue. The evidence received at the trial court disputed when that tort claim notice was sent on July 9th. It was sent to Simpson at Metro Catering at the Transit Authority address. Ms. Simpson, not an individual designated by Nebraska Revised Statute 13-05, not a clerk, secretary, or other official whose duty it is to maintain the official records of Metro, nor has she ever held such with Metro. The other important thing for the court to look at when it's reviewing this matter is Ms. Simpson's affidavit, only evidence offered and received at the trial level concerning the issue of compliance with.
What was her position?
The position was legal and human resources director, and the evidence also establishes, Your Honor, that at She took over for Patricia Arps, who was Metro's human resources administrator prior to Ms. Simpson. The evidence further established at the trial level that Ms. Simpson took over all of the job duties of Ms. Arps, who was the human resources administrator in the McElwain case.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the after the or part of the statute? After the or?
Yes. After the or talks about how a political subdivision can designate its legal department, law department, to receive tort claims. There is no evidence that Metro has done that.
How would they do that?
I think there's a variety of ways. You could put something on the website. I think also what's important in this case, too, is if the plaintiff would have inquired, have a law department, who do I send this tort claim to? Transit Authority would have said, here's our law department, here's the person designated under 5. What's important here, too, is there's a difference between giving false or misleading information when asked and not giving any information when not asked. We're dealing with the second and
it's my understanding, though, that Ms. Simpson, in response to the claim, indicated she was authorized to respond to the claim.
That's correct, Your Honor. And
so doesn't that sort of imply the after the or language?
No. The facts here are essentially the same as McElwain, but also another case that the court will look at is Willis v. City of Lincoln, which can be found at 232-533. And in that case, the plaintiff sent a tort claim notice to an individual who was not authorized to under the act. After that tort claim was sent, the plaintiff received information from the Lincoln Transit Authority that a certain adjuster would be handling the claim. And the Nebraska Supreme Court in that case rejected the plaintiff's equitable estoppel argument, stating that the information on who would be handling the claim was provided to the plaintiff approximately 6 weeks after the tort claim was filed.
Isn't a letter saying that someone would be handling the claim is different than someone saying, I'm authorized?
No, because at the time that the tort claim notice was sent, before such time, there were no representations or any conversations made by anyone at the trainer, let alone Ms. Simpson, regarding where the tort claim notice should be sent. Since there were no actions taken by the Transit Authority or no affirmative statements made at the time the tort claim notice was sent on July 9th, the estoppel argument fails because the case law states that, again, the Willis case, reliance as an element of estoppel cannot be based on conduct or statements that occur after the alleged reliance. And so what we're looking at one day here, July 9th, 2015, was the tort claim notice. It was not. And what's also important, too, in looking at Ms. Simpson's statements, Your Honors, are that there's no, looking at Woodard v. City of Lincoln at 256-61 and the McElwain case, there's no duty on the part of a political subdivision to inform the plaintiff of the existence of the statute of limitations or another nuance of the law. Important in that case, or those cases too, is that if there's no duty to inform is particularly true where the plaintiff did not inquire of the political subdivision to whom the claim should be addressed. More importantly, an estoppel cannot arise where the party claiming estoppel is equally negligent. The appellant also tried to advance a substantial compliance theory. That clearly does not apply here. For substantial compliance to apply, the notice must be filed with an individual or an office designated under the act to give the tort claim notice. Evidence in this case clearly establishes that it was not one of the individuals designated under Nebraska Revised Statute 1395-2 such. Turning to the estoppel argument, I've already run through a couple of tenets of law. I think what's important too here is that, like I said earlier, there's no evidence of any conduct or statements by Metro before plaintiff filed the tort claim. Any correspondence occurred after the tort claim was received by the Transit Authority, and at the point that it was received, it was already effective. And if you
are you familiar, I'm sorry that I can't recall the name of the case, but are you familiar with a Court of Appeals case that dealt with Lincoln Public Schools and the notice being given to somebody within the school district who was not as designated by statute. And this court determined that case on an equitable estoppel principle. You know which case I'm talking about?
I recall the case.
It's called Lowe.
Lowe, thank you. Yes. Thank you, Judge Arterburn. Can you distinguish your situation from that case, if you can?
Yes, and I can't remember the exact facts of that case, but I think what's important for the court to remember, as the Nebraska Supreme Court said in McElwee, is that the doctrine of equitable estoppel will not be invoked against a governmental entity that's under compelling circumstances. And in such cases where it is applied, the doctrine is only to be applied with caution, only for the purposes of justice. And in looking at that case and looking at the elements of equitable estoppel, six elements that must be met. And focusing on three of those elements here, first, must be conduct which amounts to a false representation or a concealment of material facts, or at least which is calculated to convey the impression that the facts are otherwise then and inconsistent with those which the party subsequently attempts. Third, there were no representations made about the tort. The transit authority was not asked, who do we send this to? Did I send it to the proper person? Do I need to do anything with this tort claim? Nothing was done prior to the time the tort claim was sent.
But Simpson's negotiations towards settlement could convey the impression that she is the authorized person for them to be dealing with, couldn't it?
It could, but if you look at Shoemaker versus the Metropolitan Utilities District in McElwee again, Nebraska law makes it clear that it would defeat the notice provisions of 13905 if mere knowledge of an act or omission by a non-designated party was sufficient to satisfy the requirements of 13905. So when you're looking at this case, Your Honor, you have to look at 13905 is a notice requirement. It does not matter. Nebraska case law states that it does not matter if the political subdivision, when it was in any way prejudice or anything in handling the claim, was affected by the tort claim. You have to look at the notice requirement. Metro and the Transit Authority raised noncompliance as an affirmative defense in its answer. Therefore, the burden was on the plaintiff and now the appellant to prove compliance with the act.
This case seems a little more compelling from the standpoint that after the or language we're talking about, the law department could be a designated authority, right? It could be. You're saying that they weren't based on these facts. But then you have a lawyer representing that she has authority to engage in negotiations. So how is that not kind of an implied authority that they're working with the right person and have notified the right person?
It could be, but respectfully, Your Honor, I think the law department argument is an afterthought. If the law department argument was at the plaintiff's, in the plaintiff's mind when the tort claim was sent, it would have said, Edith Simpson, law department, Edith Simpson, designated lawyer, designated law department of the transit authority. You don't have that here. All you have is an address to Edith Simpson. And if the plaintiff would have looked at McElwee case, that case right there tells you exactly what you need to do to apply the claims act. And there is dicta in that case. Dicta is not law, but there was dicta in there that said, there's a procedure by Judge Girard. He wrote the concurring opinion. There's a procedure. The procedure must be followed, like the procedure taken up with the legislature. And just the other thing, too, is that there were no conduct prior to sale. I think that's important.
Thank you, counsel. How much time is remaining for the appellant?
I think Your Honor, the defendant to be mischaracterized really for the Supreme Court. That was a non-substantial time. The question was whether or not the notice itself, when it was sent, was it enough? No, that is worse for the city. Shoemaker versus Metropolitan Utility. The question was, you know, completely a claimant justice. Absolutely claimant justice. They call back and say, go ahead and talk to the claimant justice. He was a different person. And the legal problem school case and through the court has raised that issue. That was the wrong person. It was not the person, but
But in that Lowe case, Lincoln Public Schools case, wasn't there evidence that the claimant had inquired of the school who is the correct person to file this with and then relied upon that information?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that didn't happen here.
That
right?
did not happen here. But what the appellee is saying is that we could have looked at the website, which we did. There's nothing on the website about banking at all. There's a procedure, there's a way to do this. There was no information. And I think if we hold on them, and I'm glad the appellee is doing it in particular, if we hold on Metro, serving the political presentation, it's probably consistent by informing them. But what are the procedures? Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. You are both excused and your case is submitted.